Well, everybody is busy shopping. It is time of Nowruz and the new year. I have bought sabze, sweets and fruits. We're waiting for the new year to arrive.
Sofre Hafsin is unique, symbolic for the Nowruz festivity and its tradition. The Hafsin spread includes 7 items, all starting with the letter Sin in the Persian alphabet. Iranians say there's a history behind each element, including serke, vinegar, symbolizes patience and immortality, sumac represents love and compassion, sib, apple, is a symbol of health and fertility, Senjet, silverberry, is seen as a simulator of love and affection. Sabze, sprouts, symbolizes rebirth. Sir, or garlic, is a symbol of protection in the face of affliction. And samanu represents affluence.
This year it's different, as it has coincided with Ramadan. So we visit our family members and parents after iftar. And yes, it is great.
Nowruz is a unique opportunity for families and relatives to get together and visit each other. That is why Nowruz is regarded as a cultural bridge which unites people. This year, as Nowruz holidays coincide with the holy month of Ramadan, family members will most likely meet up after sunset or time of iftar when those who are fasting break their fast. Nowruz has begun and the Iranians are celebrating it as an ancient festivity to mark the first day of spring and the renewal of life and nature. This year, Nowruz has a different flavor to it as the Iranians are celebrating it with the holy month of Ramadan together, making it an exception. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Earlier this month, the Maidenhead constituency in southeast England woke up to the resignation of its Conservative MP of 27 years, former Prime Minister Theresa May. Hers was one of up to 100 other well-established as well as younger MPs across the political parties announcing they wouldn't be running in the yet-to-be-announced next general election. Scottish Nationalist Party member Martin Day explains why so many are choosing to go.
For some, it's just age. They've reached retirement age and they're going. For others, they've got family commitments and they want to do that or other things with their lives. But for some, it's the toxic nature of politics. It's the toxic nature on social media where they're being trolled. And for some, they're actually being physically stalked and threatened with violence.
One MP, Caroline Lucas, the Parliament's only Green MP of 14 years, has cited the dysfunctionality of Parliament as her reason.
This Parliament has always been dysfunctional. I think perhaps one of the benefits of social media and modern television is that we see it more. It's not fit for this 21st century. I don't think it was fit for the 20th century. It's a Victorian construct, and it worked in their day. It doesn't work in our day. We should have electronic voting, we should have proportional representation systems, and we shouldn't have an unelected second chamber.
But while resignations are not uncommon ahead of a general election, it is different this time round. At least as far as the ruling Tories are concerned.
Well, you've heard the phrase, rats deserting a sinking ship. Clearly, the Tory ship is sinking, and that's why so many of them are jumping overboard and seeking refuge elsewhere.
Britons will vote in local elections in May. The Tories are 26 points behind the opposition Labour Party in opinion polls. Pressure is growing on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to call an early national vote.
As it stands, there won't be a general election in May, but one in the second half of the year seems more likely. Nevertheless, catastrophic results in the upcoming local elections could mean that Rishi Sunak and his Conservative Party's days in power are numbered. Saipur is up, London.
South Korea this week hosts the third U.S. initiative of the Summit for Democracy. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken suggested America could lead the world toward democratic ideals lacking elsewhere.
Vitalizing democracy will also require us to shape a technological future that's inclusive, that's rights-respecting, directed at driving progress in people's lives. As authoritarian and repressive regimes deploy technologies to undermine democracy and human rights, we need to ensure that technology sustains and supports democratic values and norms.
No, 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 no.
Corralled away from the venue, activists were joined by a South Korean lawmaker to question Washington's and Seoul's credibility, particularly in light of U.S. support of Israel's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza.
Since Yoon Suk-yeol came into power, our democracy index has fallen by 19 points, and we're turning into a very backward country in terms of democracy. The United States, the enabler of the massacre, Israel, the perpetrator of the massacre, and South Korea are causing the endless decline of democracy.
Activists say the U.S. and South Korea have the blood of tens of thousands of innocents on their hands through the provision of weapons to Israel and failure to pressure Tel Aviv to end its genocide.
It's not the time for the South Korean government or the U.S. government, who are complicit in Israel's genocide, to discuss democracy. Instead, the Korean government should urge the U.S. and Israel to immediately stop the genocide, lift the blockade of the Gaza Strip, and end Israel's colonial military occupation of Palestine.
While a rift has appeared in U.S. support of Israel, concern is mounting that the Israeli military will increase attacks on the already besieged Rafah, where Palestinians await humanitarian aid amid reports of starvation. Like here, around the world can be found supporters of a free Palestine protesting against Israel's genocide in Gaza week after week. And here at this summit titled Democracy for Future Generations, a glaring question clouds proceedings. What will happen to the next generation of Palestinians? Frank Smith, Seoul.
The people of Afghanistan are facing immense hardship and sorrow, with the country finding itself at the bottom of the World Happiness Report rankings. The report, which evaluates nations based on various factors such as freedom, health, and income, has named Afghanistan as the unhappiest, where almost everyone is very unhappy.
Everyone here agrees with the result of the World Happiness Survey. We are unhappiest, and that is because of the ongoing poverty, unemployment, and lack of freedom and opportunities. Furthermore, girls cannot receive education, which further adds to the misery of Afghan families. When women are despaired, families feel unhappy.
I have been unemployed for almost 3 years. Since then, I have not had any income. My young daughters are missing their school, and this situation is so tough. How can we be happy? The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
As we speak, mental clinics across Kabul are receiving more patients than ever. As a psychologist, I witnessed the rise of mental health problems such as anxiety, stress, and depression. They have even led to suicide. If you take hope away from people, it will result in a depressed and dead nation. Hope is everything for human beings. If it is eroded, all progress will be lost.
The Afghan people are resilient, but the absence of basic human necessities and rights can crush even the strongest will. The international community and the ruling Taliban share a responsibility to bring some hope and light to the life of the crisis-stricken nation. Decades of foreign interventions and war have made Afghans the poorest and the saddest people on the planet. This nation has long yearned for peace and happiness, but it remains to be seen when or whether they find their lost dream. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The appointment of a new Palestinian prime minister at the current circumstances can deepen divisions as the Israeli war on Gaza rages. This is what some Palestinian factions revealed after President Mahmoud Abbas appointed Mohammed Mustafa, a long-trusted advisor on economic affairs, as prime minister and tasked him with forming a new government. Both Hamas and resistance movements, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and the Palestinian National Initiative said that without national consensus, it's a reinforcement of a policy of exclusion and the deepening of division. We met Dr. Mustafa Al-Barghouti, Secretary General of the National Initiative. He told us that the most important thing is now a unified leadership.
We're not against the new government. We're against the way the government is being formed. We want a national consensus government, a government which is acceptable and accepted by all Palestinian political groups through a national dialogue between the different groups. And that is natural because, and for us, the main goal first before forming a government is how we structure a unified Palestinian national leadership.
Mohammed Mustafa replaces Mohammed Shtayyi, who resigned less than 3 weeks ago, citing the need for real change. Experts, however, say the Palestinian Authority and initiate the establishment of a political framework capable of governing a future Palestinian state to take charge of all Palestinian territories after the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza ends.
First of all, that there was a pressure on the Palestinian Authority to make some changes, and that's why they complied immediately and appointing Mohammed Mustafa as the new prime minister. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, which is most importantly as well, what the Palestinians wanted. The Palestinians don't want another government to be the same. The problem here is with Israel. Are they, and the international community, are they able to really make the change and let this government to work or not?
The new prime minister now would work to form a technocratic government of experts. Abbas has also asked Mustafa to create plans to reunite the administration of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, reform the government, and address internal corruption. A real political change, not a change in words only, is what the people here desire. Moreover, the upcoming government faces numerous challenges, namely rebuilding the Gaza Strip, torpedoing Israeli plans to control the coastal enclave, and managing Palestinians' lives. Mona Kandil, Occupy Jamallah.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling has claimed more lives in the besieged territory. The Palestinians' death toll has now surpassed 32,000, who are mostly women and children. Israel keeps expanding the scope of its crimes against Palestinians by bombing and raiding hospitals, opening fire at displaced people queuing to receive aid, and assassinating civilians with drone strikes. And all these atrocities are committed with impunity due to the unconditional support from Western powers, particularly the United States. We'll discuss that more in tonight's Spotlight program. Our guests joining us are author and political activist Eve Engler, joining us from Montreal. And from Chicago, we have political commentator Shabir Rizvi.
This is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Engler in Montreal. Now, attacking hospitals and shelters, it's been a hallmark of the Israeli regime's conduct throughout its genocidal assault. Now, Al-Shifa Hospital, where 30,000 Palestinians are taking shelter, has been under attack and under siege for almost a week now. Some of the details of what's going on there, Israeli forces have cut off water and electricity to the medical facility. Has the impunity of the Israelis completely in line with the inaction of the international community reached this point where they can push the boundaries of monstrosity and act in complete contravention of all international conventions and rules of armed conflict?
Unfortunately, it has. I mean, it's war crime after war crime after war crime after war crime. They boast about it. Israeli, you know, soldiers boast about it online. And it looks like the U.S. is going to be vetoing another U.N. resolution. I mean, Israel just keeps getting the support, gets new weapons, and there seems to be almost no threshold at which they can surpass that leads to serious consequence. It's almost beyond belief. But this is we just have to keep raising the pressure in the countries like Canada, where I am, that have been enabling this unbelievable horror.
Mr. Rizvi, the U.S. Proposed a resolution at the Security Council earlier today calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a hostage deal. That was not passed as Russia and China vetoed it. Moscow and Beijing, of course, voting down the U.S. resolution. It shouldn't come as a surprise, as an immediate and unconditional ceasefire not linked to the release of the captives was all they would accept. Break down what happened today at the Security Council, and how did you view the U.S. proposal in the first place?
Yes, well, it's clear that the U.S. so-called ceasefire proposal isn't a real proposal for ceasefire. If you read the details, this basically just abides by Israel's demands without making any real concessions to the Palestinian resistance. And first and foremost, this so-called deal would allow for the full invasion of Rafah, where the Israeli army would without a doubt continue the ethnic cleansing, continue the war crimes, and continue the genocide. This is being falsely promoted, in my opinion, as a ceasefire deal in order to make Russia, China, and whoever else disagrees with that may disagree with this ceasefire proposal look like the bad guys at a time where there is more violence and more ethnic cleansing happening before our eyes. Within the actual ceasefire resolution, the quote-unquote ceasefire resolution proposed by the United States, this was basically just blanketed as Israeli demands. And they might say that, you know, they're allowing or they're asking for more humanitarian aid to come into Gaza. But what we're seeing is the delivery of the humanitarian aid is being impeded by Israeli settlers who block off access to the humanitarian aid. Two, the delivery of the humanitarian aid in itself is a weapon, because as Palestinians are being starved out, starving Palestinians run to the deliveries wherever the aid is being delivered, only to be shot down by Israeli forces or be crushed by the crates that are being airdropped anyway. So in and of itself, the delivery of the so-called humanitarian aid is actually allowing for the further elimination and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And last but not least, baked into that would likely be the expansion of this so-called humanitarian port that's being built on Gaza, which, by the way, the Palestinians never had access to or the ability to build their own ports in the first place due to being besieged by the Israeli occupation. This would allow the United States to then create this port, which would lead to more further occupation of Palestine, perhaps even installing some sort of U.S.-Israel partnership base to besiege Gaza even further. So the whole deal is not really a deal.
Mr. Engler, the U.S., it wants to establish a port to deliver humanitarian assistance in Gaza, but at the same time it provides weapons and lethal arsenal to the Israelis. Break down this questionable and appalling hypocrisy and inconsistency by the U.S. Many critics have described the U.S.'s involvement in efforts for ceasefire as nothing but a facade.
correctly so, there's no problem with getting food and other things into Gaza if Israel just stops blocking it by truck. And a simple way to pressure Israel to stop blocking it by truck would be to say that we are going to, at minimum, stop the weapons shipments until you stop doing that, let alone the $4 billion a year in annual military donations or aid donations to Israel that the U.S. gives, plus this plan to expand that. So this is not rocket science. There is no reason why there can't be hundreds, if not thousands, of trucks that enter Gaza every single day like they have in the past. This is just that Israel wants to collectively punish Palestinians. Israel wants to drive Palestinians out. Israel wants to make it unlivable. And it's the responsibility of those governments that have provided so many forms of diplomatic, financial, military, etc. Support to withdraw that to make sure Israel lets in food. But that's not complicated. This is a sort of all a big diplomatic game Americans are playing to act like they're getting tough on Israel. They're against the operation in Rafah because it's bad for public opinion when it comes to the U.S. internationally, and so they're making a big, huge show of visiting Blinken, visiting Israel, and acting like they're trying. I mean, if they really want this to happen, they really want there not to be a full-on onslaught on Rafah, they really want food to get in, they have to exchange that, bring in pressure. It's simple, and we're not talking about boycotting and divestment and sanctions, which many people are calling for. We're talking about just stop these huge financial subsidies that are already being given. Just withdraw this unique form of support that's already being given to this country that, going back 5 months, was a brutal apartheid state and is now engaged in a holocaust in Gaza.
Mr. Rizvi, Israel has backtracked on a photo collage of resistance fighters it claimed to have captured during the raid on Al-Shifa Hospital. Hamas had, of course, earlier dismissed the Israeli regime's allegations that tens of members of the Palestinian resistance movement had been arrested during the ongoing attack and siege of the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. Hamas says that the attack on Al-Shifa is part of the systematic destruction of health facilities by the Israeli regime. Do you see it in that light as well?
Absolutely. What the Israeli regime is doing is they're intentionally attacking hospitals, and when people are in the hospitals, they're going to pull out anyone that is a military-age male, which to them, by definition, is going to be anyone that looks remotely like a teen, all the way to maybe even the elderly, and they're going to accuse them of being Hamas just because they fit that description. This then, they turn around and tell the international community that this justifies their operations within hospitals. Everyone knows that this is false, that they are lying, but they are going to keep peddling this lie in order to continue their war crimes against these hospitals, against the Palestinian people. It's becoming clear, at least to the international community. I mean, I've known about this for years. Many people that are familiar with the Palestinian issue have known about this for years, that Israel has always wanted to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip. It's always been a thorn on their side, and they are taking this opportunity to commit an ethnic cleansing before the world and kick out the Palestinian people. And one of their ways of doing this is, as you said, systematically destroying whatever health care is left in the Gaza Strip, which to begin with was already terrible. People couldn't get cancer treatment. People couldn't get treatments for various diseases. They actually had to leave the Gaza Strip to do it. So these health facilities were already not in great shape. They weren't allowed to have various devices, various medicines, and even doctors weren't even able to be trained properly by world health standards. And so what Israel is doing is eliminating what's left, so that if so that when Palestinians return back to their to the Gaza Strip, to these various hospitals, they have absolutely nothing to start off with. And so it's clear that what we're seeing here is war crime upon war crime, and they're justifying it by calling anyone that stands in their way Hamas or Hamas affiliates.
Considering that the Rafah offensive, appears to be imminent on that issue, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has called it a quote-unquote mistake. Now, that's a severe understatement to call it just a mistake, as it would be a mass slaughter of civilians taking shelter in their last refuge as their homes have been demolished. What has the international community learned over the past 6 months of this genocide unfolding? And with that, how can the international community stop this massacre of Rafah from happening?
Well, I think most of the world's population has had it confirmed that Israel, Zionism, is a absolutely brutal country, political movement that needs to be overturned, needs to be altered, radically altered, whatever you want to call it. So I think for the vast majority of the world's population, they've learned just that there is kind of no horror that Israel won't commit. For when we talk about the international community, when we talk about the powerful Anglosphere or NATO countries, anyone with a minimum of heart, of humanism in those positions of authority and power, they should have learned at this point that the only way that Israel is going to be restrained from its most odious tendencies is to end the forms of support that we are giving to it. I mean, so no matter how many times Blinken repeats some concern about human lives being lost, there's too many, or Biden claims that he's caught in a hot mic saying that there's too many people being killed and this kind of stuff, it's a matter of bringing in something that's going to bring some form of cost to the Israeli government, and quite frankly, to the Israeli public. The Israeli public are genocidal. The Israeli public are drunk on supremacism, and they need to be restrained. They need to understand that the world's hegemon and the powerful countries are no longer going to provide the weapons, to give one example, for the Holocaust they're committing. The international community, Blinken at this point, if he's has any seriousness about wanting to curtail a slaughter on top of the however many slaughters that have been committed, he has to bring in some form of sanction on Israel.
Shabi Rizvi, video has been released showing Israeli forces killing, or better said, executing four unarmed Palestinians in Gaza using drones. Now, the unfolding events of the past few days, i.e. The continued blocking of entry of aid, the siege of Al-Shifa Hospital, they clearly expose Israel's intentions of engineering this famine and contributing to this genocide that's taking place. Is this a clear indication that this massacre has not only been a war against Gaza's resistance, but against all of the population of Gaza?
I saw that footage. It was terrible. It made me tear up, just how criminal they are towards the Palestinian people. I think from day one, even in day one being years ago, day one was on October 7th. I think from day one, Israel's sights were set on Gaza and removing all the Palestinians from there. What we're seeing right now is for Israel a closing window, because they feel that the United States, as Netanyahu said earlier, that they want to continue the operation with or without the United States support. We all know the United States is the main financier and the main political backer of Israel. In fact, without the United States' help, Israel wouldn't last a second. it would be crushed. And what we're seeing is an unhinged Israel that knows that the United States will support it no matter what, but now clearly being challenged to some degree as Joe Biden and the Democratic Party here face resistance, not only in the streets of the United States, where millions and millions of people across the country weekly demonstrate for the Palestinian cause, and the Palestinian cause in the United States is more popular than ever, but now it's actually even reflecting at the polls, where in states like Michigan, which has a significantly large an Arab population and a Muslim population, they're voting uncommitted to a point where it's showing in the polls, it's hurting Biden, where 10%, 20%, 30% of people are voting uncommitted. I live in the state of Illinois, where in Chicago, a significant portion of people that typically vote Democratic are now voting uncommitted. In fact, they wrote down the words, they wrote down the word Gaza instead of uncommitted. The Palestinian cause is becoming more popular, and with this, Israel is afraid. Israel is afraid of the support that it used to enjoy throughout the international community. And so right now what it's doing is it's lashing out. And unfortunately, their soldiers also have, unfortunately for them, I should say, their soldiers have no discipline. They feel completely emboldened. If you check their Telegram channels, they're uploading videos of them torturing Palestinians, of them massacring Palestinians. And the world is seeing this. The world is seeing the Israeli experiment for what it has been since it started. These types of massacres have been happening since the 1940s, and they've happened every year since then. The world is finally waking up to the ongoing horror that Palestinians have faced. And the Israeli regime, for this part, is panicking. They see, to some extent, a window closing on that support, and they're willing to do whatever is what necessary within that window to meet their goals. Those goals are clearly not being met. The Palestinian resistance is still alive and well. They still have not been able to save any hostages without massacring, without even massacring those hostages. And in fact, they've allegedly killed 70 out of the 100-something hostages with their own bombs and bullets. We're seeing this Israeli regime fall apart in real time, and with this falling apart, they're becoming more and more heinous and committing more war crimes in order to meet their political goals, but to no avail.
Mr. Engler, Iran's foreign minister has recently said the world has realized that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reached the end of the line, is desperately trying to survive. Now, a U.S. Intelligence report had earlier surfaced in this regard that the White House was likely searching for an alternative to Netanyahu. Is Netanyahu now a liability, even not just for Israel itself, but for Israel's allies? And do you think that he's one of the main reasons that any negotiations on a ceasefire keep failing?
Yeah, well, I think Netanyahu's been a liability, specifically the right, far-right cabinet, even before the last 6 months. So there was a concern that these fascists have taken over the Israeli government. So the U.S. at this point, Netanyahu has very, very particularist, narrow personal interests in not having an election and not finding himself in jail and stuff like that. So that's all part of it. And I think that the U.S. Would prefer Benny Gantz as prime minister and have a little bit more compliant, a little bit less extreme leader leading this genocide. But there's not really that substantive difference, and this is the U.S. doesn't need to continue. They can withdraw. I mean, again, they don't have to send weapons. The shipments of weapons don't have to happen. The U.S. soldiers, the U.S. intelligence assisting the U.S. doesn't have to happen, or assisting Israel doesn't have to happen. All these different forms of support, they don't have to happen. But I think that Netanyahu is a liability. That's been the case for a long time, and yet the U.S.'s policy is to back this European colonial outpost destroying the Middle East.
Shabi Rizvi, why aren't regional blocs or even Arab governments stepping up and taking matters into their own hands? Many officials have called on Muslim and Arab countries to openly express their opposition to Israel, to blockade Israel, to cut ties with Israel. Why is that not happening?
The sad fact is that a lot of these Arab leaders are traitors. Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Jordan, they created within months, within weeks of the Yemeni blockade of the Red Sea, they created a land bridge to make sure that Israel still gets its exports, or rather gets its imports one way or another. The same could be said for Turkey, which has become one of the main exporters of fruits and vegetables to the Israeli regime, especially as Hezbollah rains down rockets on the north, which hurts their agricultural sector, only for Turkey to come around and basically give them the same goods. Of course, they have to pay more for these, but that's besides the point. A lot of these regimes are now showing their true face. These leaders are showing their true colors. They want to be part, to some extent, of the American experiment, or rather they want to play both sides of it and hope for the best. But the fact of the matter is, you can't play both sides. If you're playing both sides, then you're essentially playing into the hands of the Americans. Now is the time to pick a side. Do you want to stand with the Palestinian resistance, or do you want to stand with Israel? Do you want to stand with the U.S. hegemonic order and eventually become those victims yourselves? And I want to remind whoever is sympathetic to Saudi Arabia or to the UAE or to the Turkey that Israel has plans to expand. It's not just going to stop on occupied Palestine. There is a concept that many of Israel's current leaders float around called Greater Israel that actually expands into Lebanon, that expands into Jordan, that expands into Iraq even. And the fact of the matter is, if they don't retaliate against Israel, if they don't do something about this cancer on the region, one day the gun is going to be pointed at them. And the same people that are financing Israel right now, the United States, will be nowhere to be found, because at the end of the day, the United States wants to make the world in its own image, and they will back Israel 100% when it comes to this Greater Israel project. It doesn't matter how profane it is, how destructive it is. They want to control that land. They want to control West Asia. They want to control the Middle East, whatever you want to call it. Israel serves as the 51st state of the United States, and it wants to expand. We're going to allow that to happen.
All right, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guest, political commentator Shebi Rizvi, joining us from Chicago, and author and political activist Eve Engler, joining us from Montreal. Thank you, gentlemen, and thanks for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Congratulations to everyone. Congratulations to everyone.
In the limelight.
The head of UNICEF, Catherine Russell, has talked about a staggering rate of child deaths in Gaza, not seen in any conflict in the world. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The French national broadcaster France 24, France 24, has covered this story and tells us more. In an interview with France 24, Catherine Russell, the executive director of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, sounded the alarm about the plight of children in Gaza after more than 5 months of Israel's brutal war. The head of UNICEF said an estimate of 13,450 children killed in the Palestinian territories since 7th of October last year is probably on the low side. She noted that many more children are trapped in the rubble or are wounded and often separated from their families. Catherine Russell also discussed the incredibly dire situation regarding hunger in Gaza. According to a United Nations-backed food security assessment, half of Gaza's population is experiencing catastrophic hunger, with famine projected to hit northern Gaza any time between now and May without urgent intervention. This is very much a man-made problem, Russell told France 24. All of us in the international community have to do better here and make sure that we can get aid to these children in Gaza. She added, "We cannot have children starving to death in Gaza. That is not acceptable." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. The staggering rate of child deaths in Gaza has not been seen in any other conflict in the world, according to UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell, speaking on Sunday, 17th of March. "I think these numbers that we're seeing out of Gaza are just staggering. We haven't seen that rate of death among children in almost any other conflict in the world. It's really shocking," Catherine Russell said during a television program. More than 13,000 children have been killed, thousands of others injured, trapped under rubble, or have lost their parents, Russell said, adding, "It's a horrifying situation." Catherine Russell added that the profound impact on children in Gaza stemming from the stress, grief, loss, and fear they experience is bound to have lasting effects on them and potentially on their own offspring as well. "We know now that children are dying from malnutrition in Gaza," she said. "I've seen a lot of children, unfortunately, in my job around the world who suffer from malnutrition. It's a shocking thing to see. Essentially, the body starts to consume itself because it has nothing else, and it's a painful, painful death for children." She added that even if therapeutic feeding can be provided to those in need, they often endure lifelong consequences, such as stunted growth, which also affects their cognitive abilities. "It's a lifelong challenge for these children if they survive," she said. Israel has waged a deadly military offensive on Gaza since 7th of October last year. More than 31,600 Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been killed in the enclave, and nearly 73,700 others have been injured amid mass destruction and shortage of basic necessities. The Israeli war on Gaza has pushed 85% of Gaza's population into internal displacement amid a crippling blockade of food, clean water, and medicine. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story. UNICEF Regional Director for West Asia and North Africa has warned that more children in Gaza will die due to impending famine as the Israeli regime continues to impede aid operations in Gaza. Adel Khodr urged Israel to open all border crossings to allow aid into Gaza Strip, citing the Integrated Food Security Phase classification recent report warning of an imminent famine in Gaza. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, findings on Gaza confirm what we have been warning about of impending famine for months now. The world's inaction is shocking as more children succumb to a slow death. All border crossings must open now to allow unfettered access to humanitarian aid for the population of Gaza, Adel Khodr wrote on social media post. The IPC, a group that includes the World Food Programme and the World Health Organization, warned that famine is imminent in northern Gaza Strip, with people suffering catastrophic levels of hunger. It said 1.1 million people, half of Gaza's population, are experiencing catastrophic food insecurity. According to the IPC, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, virtually all households are skipping meals every day, and adults are reducing their meals so that children can eat. In two-thirds of households in northern Gaza, the report said people went entire days and nights without eating at least 10 times in the last 30 days. In southern Gaza Strip, this applies to one-third of the households. In a statement published on Monday, the United States Agency for International Development USAID Administrator Samantha Power said the IPC report is a reality for the population of Gaza. Samantha Power added that there have been only two famine declarations in the 21st century, which marks a truly tragic milestone. The catastrophic levels of hunger and malnutrition described in the IPC report should be unimaginable in the current era. But for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza, this is reality, Samantha Power said. Martin Griffiths, the United Nations top relief coordinator, said on X that the international community should hang its head in shame for failing to stop the famine in Gaza. We know that once a famine is declared, it is way too late. The head of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, Philip Lazzarini, also expressed his disappointment as he was refused entry into Gaza, where he was scheduled to enhance the humanitarian response in the territory. This man-made starvation under our watch is a stain on our collective humanity, Philip Lazzarini wrote on a post on X. Meanwhile, the president of Iran said Ebrahim Raisi has called for a serious practical step to stop the Israeli regime's ongoing attacks on war-torn Gaza. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, was speaking during his New Year message to Asian countries celebrating Nowruz, the Iranian New Year. The Iranian president said Nowruz is a message of peace and peaceful coexistence and also a symbol of reconciliation. The Iranian president said this year, we, the countries of the Nowruz Civilization Zone, are celebrating this auspicious occasion while the oppressed and powerful people of Gaza are facing the brutal attacks of the usurper Zionist regime and are also under a complete siege, being deprived of their access to basic healthcare and basic facilities and are in danger of starvation and famine. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, said, it is our humanitarian duty to use our capabilities to take serious practical steps to stop the attacks of the Zionist regime and send humanitarian aid to the oppressed people of Gaza. The Iranian president sent a message addressed to the leaders and peoples of the countries of the Nowruz Civilization Zone. In a separate New Year message addressed to the Iranian people, President Raisi hailed Gaza's resolute resistance against the brutal Israeli onslaught. He said the global powers use all their might to try to destroy the 2 million people of Gaza. Meanwhile, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has said its fighters have attacked Ben Gurion Airport twice in the past week using drones. In a statement on Wednesday, 20th of March, the Iraqi resistance confirmed its attack on the Israeli regime, which is currently waging a genocidal war on the people of Gaza. The fighters of the Islamic resistance in Iraq at dawn on Tuesday have targeted Ben Gurion Airport in the Zionist regime using drones. The resistance also affirmed its commitment to strike the enemy's stronghold as part of its second phase of operations in support of the Palestinians of Gaza. In response to the Israeli massacre of Palestinian civilians, the second phase of the resistance's operations has started, which include the enforcement of a blockade on Israeli maritime navigation in the Mediterranean Sea and putting Israeli ports out of service. The resistance also attacked the same airport on 12th of March using drones. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it will continue its attacks on Israeli targets until Israel stops its genocidal war in Gaza.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines, the Israeli genocide continues in Gaza. The United